High School Slumber Party is brought to you by the Cage Club Podcast Network. For all things Cage Club related, head on over to cageclub.me. That's cageclub.me.
School is out and it's Friday night. I'm all wrapped up and I feel alright.
Welcome, stars of the girls' basketball team, your cool basketball coach, men with very large drills, oh, and an extra special shout-out to all you pioneering women in horror out there. This is High School Slumber Party, the podcast where me and some friends look back at our teenage years through the lens of some iconic high school-centric films. I'm Brian Rodriguez. And the party's at my place this evening. But your sophomore year of school is still in session. So let's chat about your homework.
This was your assignment, and I would like to see the results.
Huge response for our episode on Varsity Blues last week. Seems like you guys really enjoyed it. I enjoyed having Kirkland Shepherd on. If you happen to miss it, if you happen to not do your homework, you can check it out in our archives, of course, at cageclub.me, that's cageclub.me. Also, where you're listening to this podcast now, whether it be iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, Spotify, and to be completely honest with you, now that we're on this topic, the best way you can help support High School Slumber Party is by giving us a review, giving us a 5-star rating, or telling one of your buddies about all the great things that are happening here at the Slumber Party. Thank you so much. Really appreciate it. Wow, I sound like I'm closing the podcast. No. We got a lot to talk about today. Today is a very important episode, so I sincerely hope you did your homework. No, I'm not talking about John Cusack. You know, he's still blocking us on Twitter. You guys haven't helped with that, but I've forgiven you for that. I just need to mention it because it's still on my mind. But no John Cusack talk today, I promise. Today is an important day. Today is the start of our, I guess, Halloween series. And believe it or not, Halloween's just around the corner, kind of. But we need a couple weeks to really dive in because I've decided, along with the powers that be, that I want to focus on women in horror this Halloween season. So, along with the special Cage Club committee of official movie choosers, we've picked some films that are, you know, very, very girl power. Wow, I sound terrible saying that. You know, movies in horror that really feature and highlight not just women actors, but women in production, producers, directors. I hope we've selected something that merits such an awesome, awesome subject matter. I know today's film certainly does, because today's film, and again, I hope you saw it, is The Slumber Party Massacre, a horror film that is written by a woman, directed by a woman, produced by a woman. So that's like a holy trifecta right there. And of course, you know, with all these great women working on this film to make it awesome, I've brought none other than, well, I've brought the substitute teacher, Mike Manzi, to help me discuss it. But that's a long story. Mike's great, and we're going to have a really, really fun time in this episode, I promise. Whoa, whoa, whoa! The bell doesn't dismiss you. I dismiss you. And before we dive in to our Women in Horror series, a series that I'm so excited to start and talk about, So we got some great movies, I promise you that, starting with today's The Slumber Party Massacre. By the way, side note, this is High School Slumber Party. The movie's called The Slumber Party Massacre. You know it's going to be a good episode. But before that, Halloween season brings on some very, very serious problems. Problems that I contemplate with. Problems that I'm, like, racking my brain with. Problems that cause me to not sleep. And no, no, no. I don't think it's a ghost. We had ghosts last year. They're gone. What is boggling my mind, what is keeping me up at night, is I don't know what cereal to serve after my slumber party, my official Halloween slumber party. The true one, you know, like the October 31st Halloween slumber party. And when you don't know what breakfast to serve, when you don't know what cereal to serve, what do, right? You ask a friend. And I got a really good friend for this. You might know him from previous episodes. You might know him from my other show, P.S. I Love Hoffman, on the Cage Club Podcast Network, where him and I break down the films of Philip Seymour Hoffman. Or you might know him from his own show, and this is where his area of expertise is. You might know him from Foodie Films. His name is Kyle Reintried, the Foodie Films man himself, and I had him over the other night to help me out with this favor. So let's roll the tape. So Kyle, I see you're in your favorite Halloween jammies. You're here ready to enjoy a nice, you know, wonderful, wonderful, I guess pre-Halloween party. And I've invited you over today for, you know, a little celebration of the good time. September, October is upon us, and I need your help. I need your help in determining something.
Please, yeah, I took the subway in my jammies.
You, again, are the Foodie Films man. You have your own podcast here on the Cage Club Podcast Network, Foodie Films.
That's correct.
And I have a debate, and I need you to help me solve it.
I'm a master debater, so.
That is true. That is true. Proven. I think we might have told some stories or alluded to some on High School Slumber Party. A face of shame. So I'll be right back. I'm going into the Slumber Party kitchen right now. And I'll need your help with something, so Okay. Give me 1 second.
I'm ready. Oh, what could it be? I hear clanking, clamoring. Is there a cereal song? I feel like I should play a cereal song right now. Cereal song, Googling. Cereal remix by Stephen Malcolm. Song about cereal.
Oh, yes, I went to hold that.
Okay. Ooh, family size. Oh wow, thank you. What kind of milk is in it? 2%.
Yes.
I hope it's better be 2%.
So
it's half and half.
It's just cream.
It's, yeah.
I went to Target. And I.
Wow, Target.
Yes, fancy. The fancy Target.
And closer, closer.
This one... No, actually, okay. No, one by my apartment. So I went to Target, and I said, what cereal should I serve at my Halloween slumber party breakfast? You know, like, when you wake up from the slumber party, you gotta eat?
Yeah,
so I saw a bunch of cereals, and while this is recorded in one night, I'll be breaking up your different cereal opinions this Halloween, Kyle.
Okay.
So we're starting out with, please read...
Booberry.
So a little history on the monster cereals, and we'll go into this maybe a little bit later, but they have Count Chocula all the time.
Mm-hmm.
But for Halloween, I know Target does, but some other places will release Booberry and another one. This is Booberry, and this is the blueberry version here.
Oh, that's okay.
What'd you think it was?
I don't know.
Have you had blueberry before?
I honestly can't say that I have. I mean, I don't even know if I've had Frankenberry.
Well,
I think I know I've had Count Chocula.
Well, let's start out with blueberry here.
Mmm. Yeah. Oh, this reminds me of something. This flavor. I think it reminds me of Trix.
There are marshmallows here.
There are marshmallows, ghost marshmallows.
Are you a fan?
Yeah, it's good. I was a big cereal person growing up, but I really don't eat cereal anymore. Yeah. Cereal was a quick breakfast, obviously, before the school day.
I know you guys love the chewing sounds.
Yeah, well, I feel bad right now. What's Kara's and what's their show?
Oh, What Am I Chewing?
What Am I Chewing?
We already told you, yeah.
You helped come up with the idea for that show, so...
I did.
I'll pour a little bit more into my bowl.
No.
No?
Oh, so you like it then?
Yeah.
I want to ask you some questions first. I'm just letting you know, you'll be eating more, so just be prepared.
Okay. Oh, no. I wanted to soak up the milk.
So you're taking more because you want more to determine your opinion.
I'm hungry. That's good. And I wanted it soaked up the milk very fast, so I wanted that real crunch factor.
Gotcha.
As you guys can hear, the crunch much more prevalent now.
So how what's the mouth feel like? I want like a true food rating of blueberry.
Well, so like I said, I think it reminds me of Trix. Definitely reminds me of another cereal, because if I've had blueberry before, it is way too long ago that it's not reminding me of itself. Especially because this is specifically the blueberry kind. But is this blueberry change flavor? Or is it multiple flavors always? Or like you said?
No, blueberry is just blueberry.
Oh, okay. So yeah, so see even that. Like, I wasn't a big blueberry kid growing up. Yeah, it definitely reminds me of another cereal that if maybe Trix, but even then the cereal I ate growing up, the big ones were, I love Pops. Pops were,
gotta have my Pops. I would say those are the teenage cereals.
As a kid, I was, you know.
Yeah, but you felt like a teenager.
I was, yeah.
So for me, the teenage cereals were always Corn Pops. Uh-huh. And this is how they were marketed in the 90s.
Yeah, Aaron Paul.
Yeah, Honeycomb. Or that might have been Aaron Paul?
No, Pops was Aaron
okay.
Paul.
Okay, so Honeycomb and Apple Jacks were like the grunge, like you're a little older teenage cereals. Like, doesn't taste like apples.
Yeah, Honeycomb's had that monster, right?
Like, yeah, I was like, oh, he's cool. Yeah, I was like, bro, like a kid in a flannel.
Rebellious.
And then it was like Apple Jacks was like, dude, it doesn't taste like apples. Come on, relax.
Yeah.
Mom, you're so whack.
Remember Apple Jacks? They had the race between the apple and the cinnamon.
I guess it did taste.
But no, I was a big Pops, Frosted Flakes. What was the other one? Lucky Charms. Cocoa Rice Krispies.
Mm.
Like, I was never... I mean, obviously, I just said ones that had some very famous between the Leprechaun and for Frosted Flakes. Like, what's the tiger's name? Terry?
Tony the Tiger. Terry the Tiger.
But, yeah. I'm trying to think of Cocoa Pop. But I Cocoa Krispies. I didn't have Cocoa Puffs, really.
A Raisin Bran guy, no.
No, not really. No, you know, well, you know, I mean, as far as, like, I did, like, just, like, regular, like, corn...
Cornflakes?
Cornflakes.
Yeah, like cornflakes like are good. Kind. Underrated. Yeah, I like Rice Krispies.
Yeah, but like cornflakes or Rice Krispies, but then even like Cheerios, but I would put like banana into it. But this is good. Obviously I'm not trying to have too many things like this. I'm sure I don't want to read the sugar.
So I want you to remember this, because in a couple moments, but it'll air next week, guys. You're gonna try a different cereal out.
Oh, okay. Yeah, no, I wanted to also finish the... I wanted to taste the milk as an experience itself.
Cause
with a lot of these cereals, that's like ends up being the best part. All the flavors.
Yeah, that's a really good point.
And I also just like a fine wine. I wanted to get, you know, just a different, you know, I want the milk from this to mix.
Of course, of course. Next. All right, so I'll be back with your next cereal.
Yeah.
And for you guys out there, like I said, tune in next week to find out, you know, Kyle's opinion on whatever next week's Halloween cereal will be.
I think you got two guesses.
Well, you don't know that. Damn, that's great podcasting. Follow that, Joe Rogan. Anyway, can't wait to have Kyle back on next week so you can hear his opinion on the next Halloween cereal that we decide to rate. Regardless, you know, I probably have kept you for too long. I can officially say that this time. But I hope you enjoyed. Hope you enjoyed the chewing sounds. That should have came with a warning. I promise next week I will give an official warning. If you don't like chewing sounds, don't listen to this next segment. But it's too late now, and I'm too lazy to go back and fix it. Regardless, thank you for still being here. I really appreciate it. Anyway, we gotta get to our film. We gotta get to The Slumber Party Massacre. So without further ado, pack your favorite jammies, your favorite slumber party jammies, tell your mother you're sleeping over Brian's, because we're about to get our party on. Let's take it away with one of the beautiful, sweet Casio tones from this wonderful, wonderful 80s camp, I guess it's camp, B-movie, I guess, horror masterpiece, maybe. The Slumber Party Massacre. Class dismissed. Dive in. You know how to do the intro by now, Mike.
Hello, everybody. How's it going? Once again, this is Mike Manzi, RHS, class of 97. Go Maroons! And if I may just say, you know, it's great to be back again so soon, but I'm having flashbacks from the spring when we did our little prom night marathon.
Oh my god, yeah.
So many vibes back.
I don't know horror and slasher as well as you, so from what people are telling me to watch here, I'm like, is it all like this?
Yeah. Oh, man.
Because it's like, so similar.
It's crazy how I didn't even realize, because I had seen this one before. We're talking about Slumber Party Massacre, The Slumber Party Massacre, Part 1. I just love this movie, and I'm, you know, it's weird because it starts off almost like a parody, but it ends as like a straight horror like drama thing, so like I don't know, I've always loved this movie. And I told you, like, it's got Slumber Party in the title, you have to do it.
Perfect.
At some point it's perfect for this. There's at least three of them, so we could cross over with my show, like, but I'd say, like, you know, revisiting a lot of horror recently, I'd say like half is like this. Like, that's the other thing, the stuff that scares me isn't classified as horror, really. Like, the scariest movie I've seen is still Mulholland Drive, in my opinion. Second is probably something like The Witch, which came out a few years ago. The Vivitch, some people refer to it as. It's like that elevated horror movie kind of thing, kind of like Hereditary as well, which is meant to be a lot scarier and stuff. But generally, movies that scare me aren't ones that are trying to with like gore and sensation. It's, you know, more story driven that creeps me out. So
No, that makes sense. And I think I'm with you there. That's for sure. It wasn't like I was necessarily scared with this film. Mm-hmm. But just want to welcome you, Mike, to our overall arching series on High School Slumber Party, as we've decided to do a Women in Horror series for this Halloween. And guess what, Mike? Just like high school, we don't have a woman with us today.
Not for lack of trying, though.
Yes, we tried to get a woman on today's episode.
But much like high school, failed to do so.
Failed to, but we'll have more of them booked on this show.
I wasn't aware that it was a whole, sort of woman-centric horror party here. I thought it was just because it's the most wonderful time of the year, October approaching, Halloween season. I thought you were just doing good horror movies, you know? I didn't realize that that was that theme, so that's cool. I like that.
We knew we wanted to do Slumber Party Massacre. Joey has suggested some films, too, and it just made so much sense. I was like, wow, just by, like, synergy, this is a great way to begin with this film, which is written, produced, and directed by a woman. Not all the films we'll be doing are directed by women, most are, but all of them have, like, women in the lead role, and women behind the scenes as well. So I'm really looking forward to this, because as someone who doesn't know horror, I'm fascinated to learn that this is one of the genres that gave women more of a chance early on, if that makes sense.
Yeah, and I wasn't aware that all three of these movies were directed by women as well. Like, they own this series, which feels appropriate, too, you know, like, considering that it's about, you know, a girl's sleepover and everything. And I love the gaze. Like, all three movies are different, but they all have such a different view than if a man was telling this story, I feel, right? Like, they just, I don't know, they feel unique in that perspective, and that's what kind of makes them a little fresh for me, even though they're definitely dated. But this first one especially, like, everything about this one just clicks for me. Like, all the actresses are great. I love the tone, the vibe. Like, I just think they nailed it.
And like you mentioned, Mike, with this series, we'll be talking about, well, technically the way the schedule works, and we'll remind you guys later, we'll be talking about both Slumber Party Massacre 2 and 3. 3 will be on your show, of course. 2 will be back on my show. And I say back on my show because Third Time's a Charm actually comes out a day before the next episode of High School Slumber Party. So if you don't want to, you could listen to it in order. You can listen to it out of order. It won't matter. We're going to just treat it like, you know, we've seen all these movies and we're going to talk about it.
Yeah. And honestly, I think, you know, you can watch 2 and 3 out of order, even though there is some kind of like super loose continuity with the first movie between part 2 and part 3. There's really nothing connecting 2 and 3 together. So like they're almost interchangeable.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So everyone on this little Halloween ride we're taking, this little hayride through the haunted, the haunted forest. I suppose I just made that up.
I'm doing noises. I'm putting my sound effects record on. Hold on a second.
You might have said some of this stuff on previous podcasts, but as I've been told, and as it's true, you don't know what day you're going to get your first listeners on a particular episode. So don't be afraid to repeat yourself with these questions I'm going to ask.
Okay.
So first, Mike, what is your history with horror films, slasher films, or this genre overall?
Oh, boy, you know, it just sort of occurred to me in more recent years just how much of like a horror hound? I don't know, a horror head, a horror file that I sort of am. Like, I always love sci-fi has always sort of been my first love, but the two genres are really closely connected at times. And you know, my first experience with horror was very young. You know, I'd say like middle school when the cool kid invited me to like sleep over at his birthday. And, you know, we'd watch and rent like Friday the 13th and like Nightmare on Elm Street movies. You know, I remember seeing like Return of the Living Dead 2 for the first time at a sleepover. And they're all in this sort of same sort of schlocky genre of horror. I don't think my intro was to like scares and fright as much as just like gore and fun kind of thing, like teenage horror sort of stuff. So maybe that's why it doesn't affect me or scare me as much as an adult, that I'm more scared by like subtle horror. I really like sort of like 70s British horror stuff, you know, with like Donald Sutherland and things, and like just weirder, stranger sort of topics, as opposed to like, you know, jump scares or gore, really. But I've just loved these movies, like, you know, growing up, my entire adulthood. I've always discovering ones I'd never seen before, too. Like, I watched a bunch a couple years ago for the first time, including this, but, like, things like Vamp, which is a great one, which is very much like From Dusk Till Dawn. It's really interesting. It's got Grace Jones as a stripper vampire. Wow. So I'm still mining this. I'm still, like, going through the horror genre, even to this day, discovering new movies. Like, Death Spa is really great. That's one I found a couple years ago. I think Joey, like most great movies that I end up liking, that was suggested by Joey at one point or another, you know, just like, yeah. So it's just like this infinite genre that is, like, still to this day, like, there's great movies coming out. Like, I really enjoyed Hereditary. I don't know if it's quite a horror movie, but I love that movie Mother by Darren Aronofsky with J-Law. Like, I find that really, like, unnerves me and like gives me, like, the frights. So I'll put that on during October. So yeah, man, I guess it's really close to my heart.
And then, you know, we just did Scream a couple weeks ago on this podcast. So I have to ask then, out of all the things you said right there, or maybe it's another one, Mike Manzi, what's your favorite scary movie?
Okay, so I think, like I mentioned earlier, the movie that really scares me is Mulholland Drive. Like, it just, I don't know, like, it just always, the goosebumps from beginning to end. But I mean, as soon as, you know, you go to the back of the dumpster behind Winky's Donuts, like, I'm done. Like, I am just in tears of fear during that movie for some reason. However, like, you know, movies along this line that like, one of my favorite actual horror movies, there's this great fun movie called Terror Vision I might have mentioned once or twice before, and it's an American Italian horror film, so it was, like, made in Italy with a full Italian crew, but the American cast. And it's got the girl from Better Off Dead, the exchange student. I think that's when I mentioned it.
That's when you mentioned it.
Yeah,
right.
So, like, I think that's a blast. Like, if you can handle that, that's almost like a Gremlins, like an R-rated type of Gremlins kind of horror movie, you know, just, like, really fun, schlocky kind of stuff. And then I really, you know, it was just Friday the 13th. I just rewatched two Friday the 13th movies last week, so I always love that series. And it's hard to pick a favorite, but I would go with those for sure.
You know, that's interesting. As you know, as I've said a million times, as I'll probably say a million times again as we do all these slumber party films, I am a relative novice to the genre. I think this period of films I'll be doing in the next couple of weeks will hopefully ingratiate me a little bit more. This one was definitely an interesting one, and like you said, it reminded me a lot of the Prom Night series that we did together. It also reminded me a lot of another film, obviously a classic, that I did for this show, Halloween.
Yes.
So
yes,
a lot of elements of that. I'm seeing, like, the tropeness. And one thing that's helping me understand these kind of horror films, like, I think when I first maybe watch them, I'd never seen this before, this particular film, but I think, like, as a kid, or when someone would try to introduce me to horror films like this, I think I would take them too seriously and look for the scares and be like, this isn't scary. Oh my God, that's so dumb. But as I've gone through this podcast, I've realized, like, that's not what it's about. And something you and I have talked about a lot and related it to is wrestling. And I think what I sometimes feel about horror films is what I know people who don't watch or care about wrestling feel about wrestling, like, oh, that's fake, how could he really hurt him with that, you know?
Right, like, look at that rubber mask, like, clearly
that's, exactly,
you know, and
honestly, my, like, understanding and appreciation of the art of wrestling has helped me understand and appreciate the art of horror and slasher films a lot more. Like, it's weird, but you gotta find your gateway somewhere into things, and that was mine, believe it or not.
That makes a weird lot of sense to me for some reason. I mean, there's just something about, I guess, like, the pageantry of it or something, is like, you know, you have your different types of wrestlers, right? And then you have your different types of horror and everything, but they all follow, you know, at least the ones that work best follow certain rules, which you saw Scream, so you're well aware now, and the whole general public is aware of what's been working for 30 years until that, you know what I'm saying? Like, there's a formula to it, and if you play within those boundaries, I mean, the potential is limitless, right? Like, it's such a great sandbox to play in. And as is wrestling, too. Like, look at how far they've been able to take wrestling in all different types of directions and all the different, you know, fans. And same thing's going on with horror, you know? Like, they're marketing Pennywise the Clown to children. You know, you can get a Funko Pop, right, of Georgie, you know, dead Georgie missing an arm, like floating too, right? Like, get your Funko Pop. I mean, it's just, yeah, like, there's just imagery as well that has become iconic. And I mean, there's even stuff in this movie where at times I feel like it's, yes, it's paying homage, but it's also establishing its own sort of like iconic imagery. And so, like, the girls with knives and things, and, you know, fighting back with the knives and the driller killer in this and stuff like that. Like, I think it's, you know, the idea that he's using the drill is not, it's selected for a very specific purpose, right? Like, it's a very sexual weapon visually and everything like that. And so, yeah, I think it's great that you're able to, you know, find a deeper connection and absorb this on a deeper level.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely helps. If I'm going to dive in, I might as well dive in, like, you know, head first.
Headbutt? Flying headbutt in?
Flying headbutt in. So, this film, is it... Okay, sorry. So let me ask this question. Is this a popular film? Like, I'd heard of it only because, I don't know, maybe in passing, and also because the name of this podcast, I probably searched it. Hmm. But is this a horror film that everyone knows, or is this kind of an under the radar film?
Well, to my understanding, it's kind of an under the radar type of film. Like, I don't remember hearing very much about this one as a kid or as a young adult, or, you know, even in my 30s. I didn't discover this until, like, just about a decade ago, I'd say. And I found it by searching through sort of the grindhouse bottom barrel, you know what I'm saying? Like, the kind of schlock list. Like, and there's a lot of great movies on that list, you know, as well, like, that deserve, you know, more respect or a second viewing and just have a lot to offer. And this one, I mean, yeah, I was definitely drawn to it by the title, but as soon as I turned it on, I knew, like, I was going to love it. Like, it just, you know, from the music to sort of, like, the damaged look of it and just the full-on... I know it's an 80s film, but, like, it just has, like, this great sort of 70s film stock look to it and everything that it feels like a great drive-in movie. And I don't know, I just this... I just, you know, really liked it, like, a lot, rewatching it, going, like, damn, this is gonna, like... really moved high up on my list. Like, I gave this 4 stars on Letterboxd. Like,
don't spoil that later for our grading segment.
Oh, okay.
Okay, so if you guys aren't familiar with the Slumber Party Massacre out there, I guess that's somewhat understandable from what you tell me, but here's what the back of the VHS said. When Trish decides to invite her high school girls' basketball team over for a slumber party, she makes 3 big mistakes. Number 1, she snubs the pretty new girl next door. Number 2, she forgets about the teenage pranksters Jeff and Neil. And number 3, her biggest mistake, she doesn't know about the escaped mental patient who will soon be dropping in on the party with his portable drill. Written and directed and produced by women, Slumber Party Massacre will scare you right down to its core. You'll love it. Honestly, I think that's a pretty shitty back of a VHS. Because, like, those aren't really, those are, like, forgivable mistakes. Like,
Yeah, I don't know. I just feel like you don't even need it with this movie. Like, the title says it all. Like, this is
yeah, exactly.
Corman posters that sold before it even started filming, kind of things.
There's so many, like, notes I took on this, like, from the behind the scenes. You mentioned the poster before I forget. The poster of this film is a really iconic looking poster, but by the time they took a picture of the poster, I think, and from, I don't know, there's some disconnect between the poster and the film, because only one of the actresses in the poster is actually in this film.
Oh, wow.
And that's, I noticed, funny, that with the last kind of, like, Corman-produced thing we did on this show, Summer School Teachers, that, like, the poster didn't look like them.
Mm-hmm. No,
and
yeah.
If you look at this poster, it's not the actors that are in the film, so I'm like,
oh,
whoa.
I love that.
This is so, so interesting, and quickly too, you mentioned the music, and I didn't want to forget this. I don't know if you read this, Mike, while doing your research, but the soundtrack, which I thought was awesome, it's probably my favorite part of the film, was completely done by just like a Casio.
Oh, I love that. I did not catch that, but I love that.
Yeah, how great is that? It was just like one person on a Casio. Like, but it's so simple, and honestly, ahead of its time. Like, if you think of a, I don't know, like, what's that director who does, like Only God Forgives and Drive and things like that? I forgot his name, but a lot of his soundtracks are like that.
Oh, Nicholas Winding Refn. Like, yeah. Now, it's a big thing now, like, yeah, even in that great movie, The Guest, like, it just, or I find it now, even with, like, period pieces and Stranger Things, like any attempt to get like the synthesizer back in effect, like I'm all for it, but this is of the time and it's almost got more of like an organ synth kind of vibe to it, right?
Yeah.
So it's like it's just like this great knockoff sort of sound, you know, it doesn't sound like a real anything but it's trying to sound like creepy organ stuff.
Yeah, and it's like for them it was probably more budgetary, but now people try to like replicate that.
Yeah,
it's really really funny. So you mentioned Corman, and we'll get into that, but again, this movie was selected because A, Slumber Party, B, mm-hmm. there's a third of the film and we knew we could do it together, and C, that whole women in horror thing. And this film was actually written by a woman named Rita Mae Brown, who, okay. I looked up, she's a very famous feminist and queer activist slash novelist.
Awesome. No kidding.
She wrote this very successful book in the height of like that like 60s, 70s like feminism movement.
Okay.
Movement called Ruby Fruit Jungle. I've never read it, but I've heard of it.
That's a great title.
And it was one of these things where it's like, whoa, I don't know if she wrote this like just for, like, the money or something. But she originally wrote this completely 100% as a satire.
Okay. It kind of feels like an answer film in a lot of ways. Like, she's like an answer to what John Carpenter's doing or something, like, or what Romero's up to. Like, not only an I can do it too, but an almost like, I see what you're doing and I'm going to kind of not make fun of it, but, like, yeah, like, it makes sense knowing that it started as a parody, but it doesn't end like a parody to me. Like, that's what's so strange about it. Like, it's shot out of a cannon right out front. Like, she gets so many things out of the way that she lulls you into, like, this false sense of security that works so well for me. Like, immediately we get gratuitous nudity in, like, 2 minutes. Then we get a kill within, like, 5 minutes. Then we get, like, another kill, more nudity, and then for, like, a good half hour, fake outs. I don't know what to believe by the time like the real killer is back in it killing again and everything. Like, she plays this like a fiddle. I really love what she's doing with this material, and to me it says like anything you can do, I can do better. It's kind of what I get from this movie in a lot of ways, and I enjoy it so much.
Yeah, and I think you'll really like how the production unfolded for this film then, because it's rather interesting. For whatever reason, Rita Mae Brown wrote this script, and it wound up in the Corman, I don't know, I don't want to call it the vault, but just like the stack of screenplays they purchased hadn't been produced yet. So the director, her name is Amy Holden Jones, and she was actually a very well, or probably still is, if she's active, I'm actually not sure, but at the time she was a very well-regarded editor. And she approached a couple people, including another producer named Francis Dole, who worked for Corman, who had, as you mentioned, and I'm going to have you go into it in a little bit, like who Corman was and what the production company was all about, but Francis Dole was another producer, a woman, who had success with Corman, and she approached her and she said, I really want to be a director. I'm not getting the chance to be a director. Is there anything I can do? And she said, here's a list of scripts, pick one, and if you finance it yourself and shoot one or two scenes from it, I'll approach Roger Corman with it, and if he likes it, you know, maybe we can work with you.
Wow.
So she picked this one, and I get a sense that she didn't necessarily know it was a satire or didn't feel that way, and she decided to shoot it almost as a straight-up horror. She shot a couple scenes, not with these actors, I don't believe. She shot a couple scenes with like $1,000 of her own budget. That producer showed it to Corman. He loved it, and he said, not only am I going to give you a chance, I want you to make a full-length version of this film.
Awesome. Damn.
So, you know, right there she got the go-ahead, and she's officially the lead producer. She's officially the director. And I said the writer is that person, Rita Mae Brown. So we were off to the races at that point. And I love the idea of that. It feels so, like, grassroots and old school and giving someone who wouldn't be given a chance. And, Mike, you'll love this fact. So around when Corman offered her the chance to direct this, Steven Spielberg picked her to edit E.T.
Oh my God, that's awesome.
So she had a choice. She could either edit E.T. and stay an editor or go off on her own and direct her own film.
Oh, that's incredible.
And she chose to direct her own film. But it just goes to show you how well regarded, because as you know, you and I know, E.T. is not Spielberg's first film. This is well into his hits. So if he's like, I want you to edit my film, obviously this is someone who is highly qualified and probably should have gotten the chance to direct something even more than this like B-level Corman thing.
Exactly.
But I'm so happy she got the chance, and I'm happy that people are starting to maybe appreciate this film and her work. And as you mentioned, and we'll get into it on the later episodes, all these are directed by women, all these are produced and written by women, and it definitely was because of like what both Rita Mae Brown and Amy Holden Jones were able to do with the Slumber Party Massacre here.
That's insane. It's the power of the three named name. They each got three names in their name, but that's... Damn, yeah, I'm still picking up pieces of my brain off the floor about that E.T. fact and everything, and oh my gosh, that's terrific. Yeah, but I think you nailed it when you said, like, grassroots, like, that's what AIP and Roger Corman, like, that's what he was all about, right? And I think that's what I mentioned on an opening to the Summer School of Teachers episode, is like, he would give you a shot, you know, and if he thought, he would be honest, too. If he thought you had it, he would finance you, or he would back you. But if he didn't, then, you know, you were out the door. So it's just great, like, all of the talent that came out of that entire camp and everything. And did she go on to direct anything else, like, that we might know of? Or can you tell me what's out there that I should go find that she's done after this movie?
Give me one second.
Oh, I didn't mean to catch you off.
No, that's a good question. Yeah, so after this, she'd done a couple things that I wasn't too aware of.
Okay.
In terms of directing, she directed a film called Love Letters, and that was... Oh, it has Jamie Lee Curtis.
Oh, okay.
So we should check it out, because it's another Roger Corman-produced film, but starring Jamie Lee Curtis.
Oh, wow. Just always, you know, always just discovering and finding new stuff to watch. I just love it.
And then the film she directed after that is a film called Made to Order.
Okay.
It stars Ally Sheedy, Beverly D'Angelo. I don't know. it's like a take on Cinderella. But then she started writing, and she wrote some really, really big hits.
Okay.
Are you ready for this?
Hit me, man. Oh yeah, I'm sitting here. I'm ready.
Mystic Pizza.
No way. Someone called Joey immediately. He's doing this Julia Roberts July Fest thing last summer. Holy shit.
Yeah. So she wrote the we recently did a dog film on one of your podcasts.
Turner and Hooch on Hanks for the Memories.
She didn't write Turner and Hooch. She wrote Beethoven.
Oh, I love it. With Charles Grodin. Okay.
Yeah.
That has a third. That has like a fifth. Beethoven's fifth.
Yeah, yeah, because it just made so much sense. You can hear my dogs probably whimpering in the background.
Oh, they don't have their own movie. That's why.
That's why. So she wrote Indecent Proposal.
Holy smack. That's a great...
And funnily enough, she wrote a film that we did on, me and Kyle at least, did on P.S. I Love Hoffman.
No, a Hoffman film?
The remake of The Getaway with Kim Basinger and Alec Baldwin.
No shit. That is insane. She was fucking elite at one point. Like, damn.
Right? And she wrote two other films after that, including one she directed, called The Rich Man's Wife. I've never seen it.
Oh, that sounds a little... Who's in that? That kind of sounds... rings a bell, but...
Let's see. It has Halle Berry.
Yeah, that sounds familiar. All right, we're getting way off track maybe, but like this is
and,
that's
and then the last film that according to the record here is a film she did called The Relic. She wrote The Relic.
I think I've seen that. I think is it in a museum? It's like a horror film, I think.
Yes. She went back to horror. An anthropologist from a field museum. Yeah.
Oh, and isn't it Mighty
Penelope
Aphrodite?
Miller, Tom Sizemore.
Oh, Penelope Ann Miller. That's it. I thought it was the girl. I'm getting that confused with the Guillermo del Toro movie that's very similar. Anyway, that's great.
So it's not like she didn't do anything after this. I wish she had probably directed more, but still pretty cool that she was able to write all those pretty awesome films.
She wrote some big dude. Indecent Proposal was fucking enormous. I can't were you alive when that came out? I can't remember exactly.
I'm pretty sure I was alive. Okay. I've seen 1993.
It wasn't sort of part of like your zeitgeist though as a kid growing up, but I remember going to Electronics Boutique one time to buy a video game, and two guys were like having a very lewd conversation about that movie like right in front of me as a kid trying to buy like, you know, a regular Nintendo game, I think, at the time.
You know, we're doing this women in horror thing, so I know this is a little bit of a tangent, but it's worth it. Now I'm reading more about her.
Okay.
So she won first place as a student at the AFI National Student Festival for her short film.
Oh.
One of the judges was Martin Scorsese.
Holy shit, who?
And he offered her a job to be an assistant editor, I believe, or something like that, or assistant director on Taxi Driver.
Holy crap.
So she met her husband on Taxi Driver, who is one of the great cinematographers of all time. At least it was her husband at the time. I'm not sure if there's some. You never know these days, but... Mm-hmm. Michael Chapman, I'm not sure if you've heard of him.
Yeah.
He did Taxi Driver and Cinematographer. He did a lot of just amazing stuff.
This is a terrific rabbit hole to fall down.
Yeah, no, and I'm reading his, like, I mean, I don't want to make it about him, but, like, his IMDb is amazing as well. So, I mean, that's
Power
awesome.
Couple, yeah, I mean.
How she got in touch, really, too, with Corman, and how she met that other producer. She edited Joe Dante's first film, Hollywood Boulevard.
Yeah, dude, that's the one. So I love this movie. Also very sort of female-centric film, but, like, it was sort of made, I think I mentioned on the Corman intro and on the Burbs episode, it was sort of made on a dare where Dante was like, I could make a movie like that's like basically 75% old footage from other movies that you've already produced. And Roger Corman's like, no, you can't. And he did. It was amazing.
Okay.
That's that one. They only needed to shoot, like, Dick Miller's in there. Like, they only needed to shoot, like,
25%. So that's a hell of an editing job then.
Oh, my God. It's, like, genius. Yeah. Like, that is a master editor stroke on that film. Yeah. Just cobbling together, like, you know, maybe 20 different movies into one film.
Wow.
You got to see. I mean, there's nothing high school about it, but you just have to see that in your spare time.
No, I definitely want to see it.
It's so
funny.
Because
it's come up a bunch now.
It's hilarious. So,
another film that our mutual friend, Mr. Christian Larson, brought up on One Crazy Summer was this film I'd never heard of, and I added to my list, called Corvette Summer.
Yes.
With Mark Hamill and Annie Potts.
Right. I remember him mentioning that on the episode. I've not seen that either. I am aware because you know, Luke Skywalker is in it. So, like, I knew what he was in, but I'd never seen it.
Yeah. So she edited that as well. So a lot of webs here with her. And,
yeah. You know, she's been there behind the scenes in a lot of stuff that I've seen. And it just, you know, now it's brought to my attention.
Yeah. Really, really happy to, like, learn about her. So the cast of this film, not as prolific as our director. I wasn't familiar with any of these people, but two of them did have clickable IMDbs. Did you know any of these actors?
No, I did not. I don't recall ever really seeing them ever again, although one or two of them have, like, a very sort of recognizable look to them, and I'll get to one especially later, my favorite character in the movie probably, and, like, it's not like they have, like, very distinct personalities. It's surely based on, like, presence and look and all that kind of thing for me. But no, I'm just not aware of any of these actors, which I kind of love about it, you know, is, like, that idea that there's no Jamie Lee Curtis here or anything. There's no Johnny Depp, right? There's nothing.
No.
There's no one really to stand out, really. They're all equal.
Yeah, the two leads, I'll say, are Michelle Michaels as Trish and Robin Still as Valerie. Sad note on Robin Still, like, she was one of the only ones with, like, a Wikipedia, and, You know, she ended up committing suicide.
Oh, no.
So definitely rest in peace to her. Kind of a sad story. Like, she, you know, got pretty depressed about her acting and such. So, that was sad. I always hate reading something like that.
My favorite one is whoever played Kim, a.k.a. Space Baby, because that's what's written on
her shirt. I loved her outfit.
She's just super cool and, like, looks just... She's got the bangs. Maybe that's what sets her apart, is she has bangs and, like, she looks totally... That makes her stand apart from all the other girls for some reason.
See, she seemed like she did a lot more of these kind of films. Her name was Deborah DeLiso.
Okay.
The other person, Linda? Do you remember which one was Linda?
Was that the neighbor with the sister? Which I love, the two sisters, the one that didn't get invited. Was that her? It was hard.
Valerie was the neighbor. That might be the sister. I'm not 100% sure. I'll check it out, you know, as we go along in my notes. But she did a million of these films.
Nice.
Like, her filmography, it's still going on today.
Oh, yeah. She's
like, for example, at least 2017. For example, I'm looking at it now. In 2011, she did 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6,
ooh,
like 6 films.
Who is she? Nick Cage? That's awesome.
She just does a lot of these, like, schlock films, like,
okay,
without even clickable IMDb's, like Die Sister Die, No Strings 2, Playtime in Hell, Caesar and Otto's Summer Camp Massacre.
Right, things that are just direct to shutter.
Yeah. October Moon 2, November Sun.
What?
Telezombie.
Telezombie. I
gotta
see that.
Something to Scream About. Blood on the Backlot. Mommy 2, Mommy's Day. Like, you know.
Oh, I love dude, these Blood titles. On the Backlot just gave me... If it's not about a killing going on during the making of a horror movie, it should be.
It should be, definitely.
That would be a lot of fun to watch.
Scream Queen Hot Tub Party. Bad Girls from Mars.
Now they're just, like, throwing darts at words.
Sorority Babes and Slime Bolorama. Nothing's going to beat that one.
No, I think we're good.
Maybe Slave Girls Beyond Infinity, but you get
Beyond
the
Infinity. Buzz Lightyear knew where that was, so maybe he's hanging out there trying to rescue them. I don't know.
Oh, man. I mean, so, again, not a well-known cast. That's totally fine, though.
Mm-hmm.
Let's get into it. Let's talk about some notes here.
Okay.
Or, what scenes do you want to talk about? What moments do you want to talk about? All these films, including this one, are not very long. So.
No, yeah, that's the thing I wanted to mention next up is, like, this is less than an hour and a half. It's probably an hour and 15 minutes. The next one, although I did find out, I'll tell you, the next one is, like, another hour and 15 minutes, and then the next one's, like, another hour and 15 minutes. However, I did find out parts 2 and 3 have extended cuts. So when we get to those, we'll get to those and everything. But, yeah, I love that about this movie. It is brisk, and it is tight. Like, it doesn't waste any time. Like, it is stacked from beginning to end. You know, I feel like we're shot right out of a cannon.
Absolutely. And I don't think the talking about the film here is going to take too long, despite it being good, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Because it's just, it's fast and it's great. I think if it was dragged out, it might be a little bit worse. But as some other films we've talked about and watched, there's not really a slow build on this one.
No, and that's not very usual, and that's what I loved about it. And you kind of get this more with, like, sequels and stuff, right? Like, when Jason returns or when Michael Myers returns, there'll be, like, a cold open where he murders someone that brought him back from the dead. And, you know, it's like, all right, we're off to the races. Okay, but generally when you watch, like, the originals, it's a slow burn for a lot of those movies. Like, it's a build-up. Like, we're stalking. And what I just really appreciated about this, and maybe because, you know, the writer and director are just, they really are acutely aware of, like, their film language here, is, like, they're able to just almost in the first 15 minutes go through, like, a mini horror preview thing where, like, like I said, like, the girl wakes up and we instantly get, like, gratuitous breast shot. And then she goes to school, and, like, before school even starts, like, the telephone person gets murdered in her van, right?
Yeah.
Like, and then there's a basketball game and at a super gratuitous shower scene, right? I mean, and this is all just, and then another girl gets trapped in an empty school after hours. Like, they're just getting all this stuff out of the way, but it's playing so well.
And it's not, how can I put it? Like, so, obviously, full disclosure, we watched all these films, and these Slumber Party films. And in the other ones, they tend to do, especially the third, I'd say, you know, spoiler alert, they tend to do a lot of fake jump scares. And I kind of don't like that in horror, like, where they're just like, oh, here's the bad guy. Oh, no, it's just the friends. And maybe there's some in here, but, like, we're getting characters that we don't really know, as you said, just, like, killed at the beginning.
Yeah. And I think what works, because I was trying to, like, really figure this out, like, why are these jump scares working when generally I hate them in all the other movies, even when they're not in horror films, when, like, an action movie tries to do a jump scare? And it's because of the beginning. We're getting real kills right off the bat. So, you know, in part three, for instance, like, we get those fake outs before we get any murders. So there's no question, really, if it's real or not. You know what I'm saying? There's no I don't get the tension. But because we've already seen one or two people die, when they do two or three of those fake jump scare kind of things, like, it gets you, you know? Like, and I think that's what I was saying earlier, where it's like, by starting it so strong, they're able to sort of lull you into this sort of, like, sense of, like, you know, on edgedness. I don't know what, like, it just puts you on, it put me at least on edge instead of taking me out of it every time, like, the jump scares came.
Yeah, absolutely. And as you mentioned, we get our actual high school scenes over with pretty quick, but I think effectively. And yeah, look, that shower scene, a lot of butts. A lot of nudity, but it's, like you said, it was shot and written by a woman and such, and I don't know if that's forgiveness. I would have loved, again, a woman's point of view on that kind of stuff today, but like, I'm drawing back to, which prom night is it? Is that the Mary Lou one, where they're
I think
just like,
so.
Yeah, I think it's prom night two, where they just have the naked, like, shower, kill, and chase?
Yes. So what I think is interesting about this shower sequence is that it's, you know, like, obviously it's supposed to be, like, titillation and all that, and I think that's just a comment on the genre in general. Mm-hmm. And I think what she's doing here is, like, not saying it normal, but it's not shot in a titillating way. You know what I'm saying? Like, they're just taking showers. Like, there's nothing really sexy about what you're seeing here. It's,
yeah, and, right? And they're just honestly developing the characters, and I get it.
Yeah.
And too, like, there is an expectation with these Corman films for nudity, so I understand why it's there. But it felt less forced, as weird as that is, than some of the other, like, nude scenes we've seen in this genre, and even in this, you know, even in high school movies, as weird as that is, because all it is just like a straight shower scene with a lot of butts.
and what the other thing too I'll say is, like, what we didn't get in the prom night movies, and what you kind of don't get in a lot of these, like, shower sequences, is it's talking about the plot and stuff, right? Like, they're talking about, like, the party, who's invited, what's going, like, they're actually, you know, saying, so, like, if you were watching this with your underage nephew or something and you wanted to cover his eyes, he's actually going to be able to follow the plot because they're talking about, you know what I'm saying? Like, he'll be able to hear necessary stuff, right? Like, it's like what they're talking about. So it's, like, very tricky that way. It's like, I don't know. I like it. It's like, because if you miss what they're talking about, you're kind of missing out on stuff.
Yeah, no, for sure. So since we're introduced to our killer almost right away, Let's talk about him before we really go into the rest of the movie, because honestly, the rest of the movie is the slumber party, and it's, I don't want to say it's one big shot, because it's not, but it's one big series of scenes.
It's pretty much one long ass sequence of of a slumber party.
How long are we gonna have to stay like this? My arms are getting tired.
Till help comes, if it comes.
You know what? I'm hungry.
Me too. What are we going to do with him?
Maybe we should cover him up.
He's dead, all right.
No kidding.
He's so cold.
Is the pizza?
Oh.
Well, life goes on after all, and eating makes me feel best. When I feel bad, and boy, do I feel bad. Oh. I feel better already. Really, I do. What if it's Neil? We better open the door.
No!
So the killer's name is Russ Thorne. This is not one of those whodunits. This is very clearly a Hal Ketchum style, because we learn that he's escaped a mental institution. And again, that's dated,
Michael
but
Myers.
We see it all the time. It's not like the treatment of mental health is obviously not great in 80s horror films. That's probably another topic for another day. However, this character, Russ Thorne, he had committed crimes in the past. He's been released. There's obviously, like, a scare with him. It's kind of similar to Mike Myers in Halloween. Michael Myers, sorry. You know what I mean. But, I mean, what did you think of him, I guess, as a killer? We don't hear him speak really to the end. And when in the end, and we could talk about it later, but he has that, like, creepy speech or whatever. As you mentioned, he has the drill as his weapon. He looks creepy. He was played by an actor really quickly named Michael Villela, sorry, Michael Villela. He doesn't seem to have done much work, but there's been a lot of interviews with him, and he took this very seriously.
Really?
He was a method actor on set.
Oh, no.
He wouldn't talk to the girls. He wasn't like, I didn't get a sense that he was like inappropriate, but he wouldn't talk to the girls. He would only show up when he had to do a scene so they would actually be afraid of him. This was like a role he took to heart. And I think you can see it here, but what did you think of him as a villain and the performance and all of that?
So again, it's a very interesting setup for the murderer, because even with, like, Michael Myers in Halloween, like, yeah, we know Michael Myers escaped from the mental institution, but we never know what he looks like. You know, like, he's wearing that mask the whole time. This guy, you see his face, you know his name, you know his MO, like, you hear things on the radio, like, he's out there, and it's just like they're missing all this information, like, right at the nick of time, right? Like, she changes the radio to listen to a song. Like, she doesn't read the newspaper, so she misses the headline. Like, it's great how the audience, I like the way the movie clues in the audience about the killer and keeps the victims in the dark. And I like when movies do that in general, for the most part, where we know more than the hero or whoever, right? Like, we're privy, and they still have to figure it out. So we're a step ahead in a way. And that creates, for me, a good sense of tension. Like, if I know who the killer is and I can spot him in the crowd, but the girls can't, right? Then, like, I'm like, that's him. But, like, you know, obviously, like, it's like yelling at the football game. Like, they can't hear you or anything. But, I mean, it creates that same emotion. And that's what I like about this movie. And you don't really get that too much, right? Like, again, until, like, sequels, when you already know who the killer is and he's back, and it's like, oh, yeah, here comes Freddy. I can't wait to hear how funny he is and, like, what kind of, like, really elaborate death he's going to perform. But this was a great surprise in that. I loved the way they treated the killer identity. And that he's just sort of, like, also, like you said, like, he's this mute guy, and he's got a really weird, intense-looking face. He looks almost a little like Dan Hedaya. If you don't know, he's the dad from Clueless. He's the Joe's
you're
boss
right,
in
right.
Joe vs. the Volcano.
You're right. I could definitely see that. You know, he was scary. He doesn't really have a motive, which kind of sucks. But we'll see in, like, sequels, like you say, this series kind of flips sequels on its head, because 3 will almost do the opposite, where, like, they're trying to swerve you the entire time about who the killer is. And I agree with you. Not always, but especially in this case, when we know it at the beginning and we're just in fear of it, especially when it's going to be like a one-day horror thing, like a one-day thing they have to escape.
Yeah, it's overnight. It's like, yeah.
Yeah, we're not consumed with who could it be, who could it be. This is simple. It's just who's going to survive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, essentially. You must appreciate like how basic this is, right? From someone who isn't, you know, very deep in on like a lot of horror stuff. Like it can get so complex and like try and do, you know, like M. Night Shyamalan, right? Like he became known like the whole twist of his and. You know, I almost feel like that became a joke to a degree where it's like, oh, in order to be like smart horror or sci-fi, like you got to add a twist to the end and like always kind of plant these seeds. But like, I really just appreciate the straightforwardness of something like this.
Yeah, I 100% agree. It makes it more digestible to me, especially someone who's, again, not used to this genre. Okay, nice. Mike, so I think if we're going to talk scenes, we can talk favorites. But for me, there are two main plot lines here. The main slumber party, and there's Valerie and her sister, the girl who wasn't invited to the party. And the question really is, like, how is she going to factor in? I guess let's take the main slumber party first.
Okay.
This is high school slumber party. We do pack our favorite jammies. So, I mean, what'd you like about, like, the setups for this here? Like, what'd you like about the friend group? You've already said which one here is your favorite. But anything of note?
Yeah, you know, I noticed a couple things. There's one thing that made me think of Scream. They do the garage door scare in this movie, right? Like they set up the garage door and all that kind of thing. I like the way they added the little details in this. Like early on, the main character whose slumber party it is, Trish, she's like throwing out her Barbies and stuff. And I guess the killer finds that and like taunts her throughout the movie by like putting them on the window and like returning them to her and all kinds of stuff. And I just thought that was really interesting. And, you know, sort of she was trying to put away her childish things, but they're like coming back to haunt her. I don't know what it was really trying to say. I don't know. Like I liked, you know, the guys when they like take the fuses out and the girls like it's so funny because like once or twice or two or three times throughout this movie, like they punch these guys in the face, like full on for scaring them. I love that. They're like, you assholes. And like punched them like square in the nose. I thought that was really great stuff. Like there's so many great little like moments. I thought the kills were really cool. Like the drill is a great and gory sort of weapon. Like, you know, you'd think it would just pierce you, but then when you pull it out, it gets like all the entrails stuck to it and everything.
Yeah, oof. I mean, it's not really explained why he uses a drill, right? But that's the weapon of choice, and that's the weapon we're going to see throughout the series.
Yeah, I just assumed it was phallic, you know, like that kind of thing.
Oh, absolutely. And I think that's confirmed when later, and again, we'll talk to it, like it gets chopped off and like it seems almost as if he's lost his powers.
That's right. Yeah, he gets, you know, I guess circumcised, for lack of a better word, at the end, clipped. But but this movie does like all of the tropes, but it does it right. Like the phone lines get cut, they're sneaking around it with candles, you know, like the killer eventually like gets inside the house when he crawls in the window. I thought that was a great shot. Like, and maybe all of these sort of like things are building tension because of how casual the acting is, right? Like, I don't know if there's like a more sort of like, not lackadaisical, but just like the sense that there's no danger whatsoever, right? Like it just feels like these girls are just like, there's no way anything bad is going to happen tonight. But like as a viewer, you know, that's like absolutely not the case. And I think maybe that's what gives me that sort of like nervous feeling when I'm watching it.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree with that. Now, look, the acting wasn't the greatest, but the group felt like a real group of girls. They felt like they had chemistry. Mm-hmm. They felt like they knew each other's ins and outs and hobbies and quirks. And like a perfect, again, high school slumber party. It really, really felt like that. And I liked how they weren't, like, goody-two-shoes either. Like,
See,
you know, they're drinking. They bring, like, the pot over. I forgot the exact strain it
Maui
is.
Maui Wowie,
yes. And there's that like neighbor who's, he's not a red herring, but he kind of is, you know, like, but he's killed, so
right,
that's taken out, like, almost, not right away, but like
he's, you know, body count though.
Yes, absolutely.
And just fodder. And but that's what's so good about knowing who the killer is sometimes, right? You see a guy like that and you're like, oh, he's dead. It's just like, yeah. How is he going to be dead? It's like what you're waiting for.
Just like the whole prepping of the slumber party, like just how hungry they get. This series, but even this movie with the pizza.
Oh, yeah. Pizza delivery is like a huge like connection, I guess, with all of that.
Yeah, it really is, right?
was that like a new thing like in the late 80s, like delivery? Maybe. Pizza delivery kind of stuff. I remember as a kid, like one day it just kind of seemed like, oh, like Domino's delivers or something. You know what I'm saying? Like usually we just go pick up the pizza.
We'll have to ask our friend on Foodie Films if he knows the history of pizza delivery.
You know what, man? This might have been a good episode to have done one of my last My Five Dads songs on here about the pizza man. Which I'll have to get to someday, but it's...
Well, Mike Manzi, you're in luck. We're doing a bunch of these together, so...
That's true. Might have to take it out of the vault.
If you want to find it for Slumber Party Massacre 2, we're all ears.
Okay. Next time a pizza guy shows up.
Quickly, is there one in 2? There's definitely in 3.
It might be in the extended cut, which I'm going to try and rewatch before we record that episode, but I can't recall.
We'll figure it out.
I've got a lot to say and not a lot to say about part 2.
The good thing for you guys who are going to join us on the ride, I hope, for all these Slumber Party Massacres, they're all very different. So we'll have all very different of a conversation.
That's and they're all short.
Yes, and they're all very short. I liked, again, maybe this is another foodie or drinky thing. I like them making the Kool-Aid.
Oh, that was great. Yes, and she makes a Jim Jones joke, too, which I thought was hilarious.
Yeah.
Sorry to, like, everyone who died and got injured during that terrible Jonestown thing. But, like, you know.
Murder, suicide.
anyway.
No, but the setup for the girls is great. And it, even though we don't get to learn about these characters... I felt so much more connected to these characters when they died than I had in previous horror films I'd seen, where they just they just give you characters for cannon fodder, it feels like.
And these girls technically are just cannon fodder, but there's something about like the camaraderie, you're right, it plays throughout the screen like they're real friends, like there's something genuine about their acting, like even though it's not good acting, like I don't know. You just get the sense that they're having a good time and everyone's like really super relaxed. And maybe that has a lot to do with this being, you know, directed by a woman, right? Directing a lot of women who are like just kind of in their underwear for most of the movie, being hunted by a guy with a big phallic killing machine, right? Like, it's like kind of amazing to me, like how good they seem, like as far as like, it's playing to me, like whatever they're doing is working, you know, like that's all I can say. Like, I know it's not the greatest, but it's working for this movie and it's setting like a really good tone.
Yeah, I 100% agree. And then what's happening in the other house again is Valerie.
Oh, which is crazy because just real quick, like they try and like overdo the development with these two and it works way less. So I'll just preface, you know,
that's why I wanted to bring her up a little separately. I didn't want her to get like lost in the weeds of this. Valerie and her sister, what is going on there? First of all, her sister does not look that young, but they're like trying to young her up so much, like she's like licking a lollipop,
you right know? Like not a lollipop, but like a sucker, right? Like a big old, like, you know,
like,
something
like yeah, like 19 like turn of the century, like Coney Island lollipop.
Seriously.
She's like, I want to be an adult. Like, it's so obvious. But she doesn't look that young. Maybe she is. I'm not sure. Like, I couldn't find information on this actor too much. But, like, I'm like, what's going on here? Did you catch, like, when she's looking for the Playboys and she finds, like, Playgirls. And she finds a Sylvester Stallone Playgirl.
Oh,
that
yeah.
That was hilarious.
Absolutely. So, I think what's going on here And, like, it's not that I don't like this stuff. I do. It's just, and this is actually kind of stuff I love about watching movies. It's like, I'm not a woman. I didn't grow up a girl. And I do have a sister, but I don't, it's not like we were sisters. You know what I'm saying? So, like, here's a movie written by a woman, directed by a woman, starring women. and they're showing me this sisterhood relationship between these two girls, and like I feel like I'm learning something a little bit about the dynamic of sisters here. Like, that's why it's kind of confusing, that's why I sort of don't get it. It's because it's very foreign to me, you know. But it's like one of my favorite things about movies is like being allowed to see this world, right? Like, just to experience these kinds of things that I'd never experienced before. And how funny for it to be in a Slumber Party Massacre movie. Like, that just adds points for me.
No, I know.
So, like, it's not, you know, there's a lot of it. There's a lot of it. Like, and I get it by the end, and I think that's why it works for me. But I could understand why it's, like, not the best part of the movie for most people, because it's not about the killing. This is, like, dramatic kind of, like, relationship stuff, which could bore people, but I was perking up during this kind of stuff.
It's so fast, and they end up factoring in that it's not bad. It just did take me out of it in terms of, like, again, I don't want to criticize it, because I actually think that Valerie was one of the better actors in this film. It's just weird, like, the dynamic with her sister. There's so many of those scenes.
And it is, like, a separate movie for most of the movie, too. Like, there's really nothing to do with, like, any of the other girls or the party.
And there's, do we ever get why they don't want to invite her?
I think this was the tricky thing. I think it was during the shower scene, right? So, like, there was something about, like, oh, you're not listening. You should be listening. Like, this is important information, but you're distracted by butts.
Yeah, exactly.
Because you're a boy, you know, because we're dumb boys, and she tricked us. Like, that's because I feel like it came out during or around, like, post-basketball.
That's when they were
game.
Talking about it, but I don't remember, yeah. Like, what the reasoning was.
I thought it had something to do with the basketball game, like she was being like a ball hog, or like she didn't pass it, or she wasn't like being a team player kind of thing. But I mean, I'm not positive.
It's possible.
Yeah.
Who knows? Eventually, when they come over, we get some great stuff. Like, one, and you know, I know we're bouncing around, but that's fine. One of my favorite images is when the one girl, she's murdered and her body's put in the refrigerator.
Are you aware of the term? It's a kind of a modern term called fridging. So it's like kind of a big problem, and like it comes up a lot. And like, so like the term, I believe, originated in a Green Lantern comic during the 90s, where he comes home and he finds his girlfriend dead, stuffed in a refrigerator. And, you know, it's like, everything I do now is motivated by my girl's death. And it became, you know, like a trope and something that people leaned on way too hard. And even up to the point of like Deadpool 2, there was like criticism because they killed his girlfriend immediately and, you know, quote unquote, fridged her, took her out of the movie, took her out of the picture. And then he could go on and, like, you know, claim he's doing it all for her. And I don't know. Anyway, when it happened in this movie, though, I fucking laughed my ass off because that wasn't a thing yet.
No.
And it was a great kill. And it was like, this guy just loves stuffing people places. He puts them in the trunk. He puts them in the fridge. Like, that's just part of his MO.
Yeah, he's got to, like, put them somewhere. And then when, like, the little sister's, like, opening the fridge and not looking in, and you're seeing, like, the actor, or I don't know. I'm assuming it's the actor. I'm assuming they didn't have the money for a body double. You're seeing her, like, hang out of it.
Yeah.
It's not so much like horror scary. It's more like, oh my God, you know?
Yeah, it's more like macabre. Like, it's more like, and that's what starts to get me about this movie is like, that's when it, you know, when I said earlier, like, it almost feels like it starts to become a serious film. And you're saying maybe the director treated it like a serious movie, not quite, you know, intending to pull off all like the satirical subtext necessarily, but a lot of it still comes through. And I love the balance, basically. Like, I like the tone of this movie a lot, so.
Yeah, I'd say probably the weakest points, and maybe not surprising considering the series we're doing, but, like, are the guys, like, those quote-unquote troublemakers, Neil and whatever, like, mm-hmm. I don't know, they just felt unnecessary. Did you like them?
I kind of appreciated about it is, like, what, like, they're not heroic, they're not chivalrous, they're not, like, here to rescue them. They just want to, like, get some, right? And they're, for those reasons, I feel like they're more, like, realistic, just high school boys, but also they're not, you know, they're not going to be of any help. And I just love to see, like, through, like, the female gaze, like, how she portrays, like, the guys in this movie, you know? And they're basically cowards, you know, for the most part. And then all they're thinking about is like trying to cop a feel or like catch a look or something like that. And I don't know. I liked that, but I also did feel like, you know, it was kind of like one of the weaker elements too. Maybe there should have been more room for them earlier or something, or I don't know what they could have done necessarily, but I think it got close to whatever they're trying to do.
And when you put it that way, it kind of makes more sense. If we're kind of like theoretically female gazing this, then mm-hmm. those are pretty accurately depicted useless guys who just want to get some.
Yeah, like, you know? One of the girl's pet names for her boyfriend is Boo Boo. Right? You know, and like Boo Boo has like one line and gets killed immediately. And so like he's almost treated like girls are stereotypically treated in horror movies.
Yeah, okay.
You know, and that's a nice comment.
So when you put it that way, I'm starting to like understand it and dig it a little bit more.
And I'm not saying, you know, it's like the Mariana Trench deep here or anything like that, but it's not the shallow section either. You know what I'm saying?
No, yeah, no. I definitely know. So, I guess, you know, we're deep into our slumber party here.
Yeah.
What are some of your favorite moments from this entire film?
So, another thing that we didn't talk about, which I think is great, is Coach.
Oh, yeah!
Yeah, right?
Again, another person who's somewhat of like the body count, as you said before.
Yeah, but set up to be almost like the hero at mm-hmm. one point. You know, you think that Coach is going to come kind of like save the day.
We see this a lot, but it's rarely like women characters as that, you know.
Oh yeah, as person. The coach, right?
Like coach or like a teacher or like a lot of times it's depicted as like a town cop.
Right, right. So it reminded me a little of Carrie, where the gym teacher is sort of
you know,
a big character there, and I don't know. I just thought that was interesting, like how she was a woman and how ultimately in the end, just because she was like older and like, I don't know, had a job, like, didn't mean that she was any better at fending off, like, a murderous killer on a rampage, you know, in the middle of a massacre.
It didn't seem like she was that much older than the actors here.
Well, that too, right. But it would have been funny if she, like, threw a basketball at his head at some point.
I like how she found out about it, because they called her just, like, to get, like, a score of a game or something. And then, like, as it, like, I guess they start screaming, like, as it happens, and she's one of the few people who believe them, right? Like,
yeah, wait. She comes over at the end and everything, right, to try and save him. I don't think any cops show up at all, so...
Right, okay, yeah, no. That's what I thought.
Yeah, it's like she shows up at the end, but she gets drilled.
And Trish has like... literally drilled.
Yeah, she gets drilled with the drill. The coach goes down, but the Trish girl finds like the machete, and it's like the world's, like, even Machete from the movie Machete would be jealous of this machete. Like, this is the biggest fucking machete I've ever seen
biggest
on film.
And strongest. It must be made of like some carbonite. Not yet.
Really, it's adamantium, right?
This drill all night has been cutting through human bone like it's jello.
And through like house, like doors, yeah. And like it, and car seats. Like, he loves to drill through stuff and get people on the other side of it. I loved that about his sort of kill technique, his kill-nique.
But they have the moment again, like we said, with the machete, and you know, like it's so brittle at that point that it's funny. Like, I'm not mad. Like, I get it, but it was interesting.
Well, I like that after she sort of chops off the drill, she then chops off his hand. So, like, is that to say, like, now you can't even, like, beat off with that hand or something? You know, I just kept going phallic with a lot of this stuff.
Yeah, there are a lot of, like, allusions to masturbation in this.
But also, like, when she slices his guts out and stuff, it's almost like, you know, in horror, this comes all through. I feel like there's papers written on this, too, is like, you know, and with this killer, like, it's like fucking you with the weapon and stuff like that. So it's almost like at the end, she's like doing him with the machete. Like, it's really crazy. Like, it goes a lot further than I thought at the end. Like, it gets into like sincere horror territory here by the end.
Ooh. So I found an interesting note, Mike.
Okay.
Now, you'd mentioned this is like an hour, 15 minutes. So the original cut, and I'm not sure if we'll ever get to see it, because it might have just been deleted or thrown away at that point.
Hmm.
The original cut was actually 90 minutes.
Oh, and I wonder if it's on Blu-ray.
I'm not sure, but they decided to reshoot the ending, and they made up the pool ending there, which is shorter, but they thought it gave, like, a better effect.
Oh, okay. I like the pool ending because, you know, like, there's a good fake-out, and he lands on the machete, and he falls in the pool, and the water turns red, right? Like, I always love that effect. I always thought that was interesting.
Yeah. No, I thought it was right. Awesome. I really liked the ending to this film. Is this the perfect film? No. But... I'm sure there's, like, problematic elements here or there, and it's not the greatest in the world, but it's certainly, like, it was easy, it was fun, you know, it was interesting, and it, for a time period when it wasn't happening a lot, it showed a different point of view.
Yeah, you know, I mean, it's in the same vein as a lot of the, there's a lot of these types of horror movies from the 80s, but what sets it apart is who's behind the camera, right? Like, I feel like that goes a long way, and it makes a difference here. Like, it's, I don't think that this material would have, you know, in other hands, I think this would have been way schlock. Like, you would have, it would have bothered me. Let's just put it that way. Like, I don't think, like, a guy necessarily would have had sort of the sensibilities to sort of, like, ride this line so well, you know? Like, I feel like this is a tightrope walk, this movie, and they're walking it really well. I think a lot of people will have fallen off of this tightrope trying to make this movie.
And Mike, we'll see. Again, I know we keep talking, like, down the road and looking ahead a little bit, but we'll see that different women will have different point of views and different ways that they want to tell this story or this similar story.
Yeah.
I hope no one thinks we're, like, painting with really broad strokes that, like, all women would tell a story this way, you know? That's not what we're saying at all, but I just happen to think that the director here, and the writer, of course, but I'm going to put it more on the director because obviously she made this her own. I'm not sure that the writer was involved in the production at all. But Amy Holden Jones here, you can tell why she went on to such a great writing career herself.
Yeah. Yeah.
And as we talk about it and hash it out, like, it makes sense. And again, maybe we're overselling this film, and I don't intend to do that. Of course, you know, is it going to be one of the most beloved films of all time? Of course not. But it's, I guess for me, it was a pleasant surprise because I really was not expecting much.
Yeah. And I think that's great. Like, you know, keep expectations low for this movie too, if you're listening to us, because let it sort of, you know, surprise you. But this to me just, it feels like a great, like, grindhouse drive through, like, you know, double feature thing. You know, it's like under an hour and a half. This was definitely, like, paired with another, you know, at the time, you know, crappy horror movie. You know, probably along the same lines. It was probably, you know, a sleepover thing, but, like, in the woods. But yeah, I just love the sensibilities here. I love the style. I just have a lot of fun watching it. And the first time I saw it, you better believe, like, it shocked the hell out of me. Like, I was just so surprised how into it I was getting and how clever I thought it was. So I hope this recommend is a good one, and I hope people like it as much as I did.
And, you know, you mentioned, like, where you could see this movie, and it's also a movie, you know, not to hit this point home again, but it's called The Slumber Party Massacre. This is Heist's Slumber Party. It very much feels like a sleepover film.
Oh, yeah. Oh, absolutely. Like, they nail that for sure, you know. And most of the movie takes place during the sleepover, too. So it's not like a misnomer. It's not like we only get it. Like, it's not like when Jason went to Manhattan, right? It took him the whole fucking movie to get to Manhattan, and he's there for, like, 20 minutes or something.
Really? Oh, my God.
You know, not to spoil it too hard or anything. And
there's a movie called Jason Takes Manhattan.
Yeah, so it's part 8, if I'm not mistaken.
Come on.
I'm not kidding, man. No, it's Friday the 13th, Jason Takes Manhattan. And I believe it's a high school film, too, because he gets there. He gets there because
I think it's
a high school graduation yacht that was chartered. Like, it's a party boat. And
reading about it now.
He stows away on the party boat. And somehow they go from Camp Crystal Lake to Manhattan. Camp Crystal Lake, mind you, to Manhattan. So they take a boat from a lake, Brian.
What? Oh,
to Manhattan. Camp Crystal Lake somehow end up in the Hudson.
Oh boy, that's Should be an interesting one if we ever get around to it.
Obviously. Yeah, almost watched it on Friday the 13th, but decided to watch part 3 and 4 instead.
Probably a good choice. So any other scenes, moments, or anything else you'd like to mention in the Slumber Party Massacre? I know we didn't go scene by scene, but again, it's not really a scene by scene film.
Yeah, no, I mean, again, I'll just reiterate for the last time, I love the vibe of this movie. I think it's a lot of fun, and I think it deserves to be seen. You know, if you haven't heard of it, if you haven't seen it, definitely check it out. You know, I mean, I don't know how it took me so long to find this movie, but something called, you know, Slumber Party Massacre, it should be up there. You know, it should be on a lot of lists. I feel like this one people are missing out. So check it.
I agree. Okay, a couple things. Mike, did you, off the top of your head, catch the body count? Because IMDb listed it, so I want to see. Do you have the number? Or
okay.
Can you guess?
I started keeping count. At one point, it's really funny because the pizza guy shows up and he goes, "How much is it?" And he goes, "6 so far." And he means six. He means 6 kills. So 6, 7.
I didn't catch that.
Yeah, because he thought it was $6. But the pizza man at that point was the 6th murder. So I'm going to say 7, 8, 9. 9 deaths? 10, including the killer?
You're close. 11 deaths.
Ooh, so close.
This is the list, and maybe you know these characters better than I do in terms of names, but it said Mary, Linda, David, John, Diane, Pizza Boy, Jeff, Neil, Jackie, Kim, Clark. I guess that's one person, Kim Clark. The coach and the killer.
Ah, okay. I think I missed one of the guys or something.
Probably, yeah, because I don't even remember all those guys. But definitely a fun watch here. So, I don't know, the critics, not really fans of this film. 40% critics, 45% audience. But I think it's one of these things. I kind of know how to watch these films now. It's for a niche audience. I think if you pulled a certain part of the room who enjoys these kind of films, you're going to get higher audience scores.
There's for 10 minutes of this movie, there's 3 girls running around with knives. Like, who doesn't want to, you know, who doesn't want to see that? Like, that's great. They're so proactive in this movie.
Yeah, don't you love how they move in, like, almost like a military, like, it reminds me of, like, a Roman phalanx, how they're moving.
Right, they're a unit, for sure, yeah. Like, that's the other thing, too. Like, you know, they're not running and hiding throughout this whole movie. Like, they're actually trying to fight back. Like, that, to me, feels kind of rare, too.
Yeah, for sure. Okay, so let's grade this movie, you know, on the old A to F scale. What are you going to rate it, Mike?
Man, I mean, I don't know if it totally deserves it, right? But I'm just a substitute teacher, so I'm going to give this one an A-minus today.
A-minus?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you know, it's a solid, I think, like, it's a solid B, B+, but I'm going for that little over the edge. I want it to have a real fan in it, in me, in this movie.
Absolutely. So I gave this originally a B-. From talking, I might give it a B, but I still think that's a really good score, especially from where the expectation was for this film, because I enjoyed it. So we'll leave it in that B- range, but I don't mean, minus isn't negative. I think that's a good score, and I really enjoyed watching it. And I think if you're a fan of this genre and you're not familiar with this film, you should definitely watch it. I know some of my other listeners are more fans of, like, Hilary Duff films or even, like, Breakfast Club type movies, and that's not this, obviously.
Right, yeah. No, this is not like a teen dramedy or anything like that. No.
No. But if you're a fan of a slasher film, this is a really good one. This is a really fun one. Okay, so what Slumber Party Massacre sleeping bag you bringing today?
Ooh. I think I'm gonna have to bring my space baby sleeping bag.
Perfect, perfect. Oh, again, I love her outfit.
It's such a great shirt. And I was just, in my notes, I wrote her down, I wrote just space baby down until they actually said her name for the next time. And I was like, okay, I'll keep track of that now.
Perfect. Now, as this is a slumber party, we're talking about slumber parties. If we rented The Slumber Party Massacre, what two other movies comes to mind for us to rent? And I'm disqualifying Slumber Party Massacre 2 and Slumber Party Massacre 3 because that's too easy.
Oh, so I have to come up with one or two movies tonight?
Two. You're the only guest today.
Oh, my God. I feel like so on the spot, too. This is going to take a minute. Okay, so you know what? Since it's 'tis the season, I'm gonna pull out some other schlocky type of horror movies that I really truly love that I think people get a kick out of. So like along this sort of same in the same vein, right? So it's like horror, but fun and funny, but also genuinely scary at times and weird. The first one I want to recommend is Death Spa. I know, but it's terrific, and I highly recommend it. It is pretty much what it sounds like. You know, it takes place at a gym, you know, like in one of those 80s sort of like fitness centers, and
man,
it's haunted, baby. And forays in there, and it's just great, and that's just a blast. Like, it's just one of those crazy horror schlock fests. gotta love that. And then, you know what? Let's go with Hollywood Boulevard. Let's go with the movie that she edited for Joe Dante, because, like, we can't, you know, spend the whole night watching horror movies. We gotta laugh a little. So, like, in between the two horror movies, we'll watch that.
Perfect. I think that's a great three movie film, and looking forward to, you know, enjoying the slumber party then with you, Mike Manzi.
The truth is, I tried to watch Death Spa after watching movies for this show. I just did not have time, but it's on my brain. I'm going to watch it very soon, so it's a recommend.
Perfect. Okay, so I think we have some joint plugs we want to do. So next week, mm-hmm. Third Time's a Charm will come out, and like I said, that'll come out before we talk about Slumber Party 2, but that'll obviously be on Slumber Party 3 here on the Cage Club Podcast Network. Sorry, Slumber Party Massacre 3. I'm sure there's another film called Slumber Party 3. That's why I corrected myself.
I think there's like Sleepover Massacre or something too.
and that'll be Thursday the 3rd and Friday the 4th. Right back here, right back on this channel, we'll be talking about the Slumber Party Massacre 2. So prepare for some more films for renting and all the other cool things we do here on High School Slumber Party. Any of your other shows, Mike, you want to promote?
Yeah, so Brian, as you're aware and as your fans know, Friday is most certainly for fun. But it's not just because of the new High School Slumber Parties that come out on Friday. It is also because Joey and I are doing what we call the Tom Tom Club, which is alternating the films of Tom Cruise and Tom Hanks every other Friday. So we have, for Tom Cruise, we have Cruise Club, where we're going through his filmography. And then for Hanks, we have Hanks from the Memories. We're going through his work. It's been a crazy amount of fun going back, looking at those two careers side by side, comparing, contrasting, all that kind of fun stuff. Fridays are for fun. Cage Club Podcast Network.
Oh, so excited. So good. Love Tom Tom Club. Well, thank you, Mike Manzi, for coming on. And of course, like I mentioned, we'll be hearing from you soon. I'll be with your baby. You'll be with my baby next week. It'll be a fun time for sure.
Awesome.
Big thank you, of course, to Mike Manzi. He's always great. He helped me break this down. He helped us slumberers understand this film. And me, again, as a horror novice, I appreciate having a horror expert, I guess, right? I mean, I don't know if he'd qualify himself as that, but I do, because I really do believe he's a horror expert. A horror expert like Mike Manzi, come on and just, you know, educate me on these kind of films, and I love it. And, you know, I thank him for being a part of our Women in Horror series. Speaking of the Women in Horror series, speaking of Mike Manzi, speaking of the Slumber Party Massacre, well, if you don't know what next week's movie is, you haven't been paying attention. It's Slumber Party Massacre 2.
Courtney Bates has got some weird friends.
I have got the fastest growing bit I have ever had in my entire life. I mean, look at this thing.
I think your sweetheart has been taking too many diet pills.
Here's a chicken sandwich if you want to cut.
She should have listened to her sister.
Don't pick up all the way.
Because when she and her band get ready to party,
do anything you want to. Good time. It's more than just a great time.
I didn't know girls really did this stuff.
It's Slumber Party Massacre 2.
Now it's time for the fun part.
He's in his house somewhere.
Well, it's 9 o'clock, I'm ready to rock. My motorcycle's out of hock. Jump on back, get the hold on tight.
Bastard! You killed Valerie!
Don't let go. Because less buzz.
Slumber Party Massacre 2. If you go, don't go all the way.
Oh God, anybody got any tranks?
Interesting film, but you know it's going to be a fun episode. And programming note, if you didn't hear it from the episode already, Mike Manzi on his show Third Time's a Charm will be covering Slumber Party Massacre 3, and that'll be for the October 3rd date. And we'll be on the 4th. So it's going to be, again, super fun. Can't wait. This is a very fun series, a very interesting series. And it's a little mini-series in our larger series on women in horror. Can't wait. October is going to be a really, really fun month. So let us know what you thought about this episode of The Slumber Party Massacre on social media. You can let us know on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, or you could email me at highschoolslumberparty@gmail.com. That's highschoolslumberparty@gmail.com. Also, let us know what cereal, you know, that you might want for our slumber party breakfast, our Halloween slumber party breakfast. Maybe it's a cereal that Kyle's reviewing next week. Who knows? Can't wait to chat with him again next week, too. So that's your homework. Think of some cereal. Watch Slumber Party Massacre 2. And have a great time. Let's see, what should I leave you with? Well, not much choice from this movie. How about some more Casio tones from the Slumber Party Massacre soundtrack? Class dismissed.
Still here? It's over. Go home. Go.